Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 High FM.
This is 101.9 High FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon, 101.9 High FM, and it's the Verbringen show. And it's been a few weeks. I hope you're well. I hope you're healthy. I wish you all the very best, and please God, as we wrap up the secular year and come, start heading into December, that we have a restful break and a meaningful rejuvenation. And I was thinking about what to share. Just giving a heads up that next week's show will, please God, be my last show on the program. I've been on the Verbringen show for over 12 years, I think. And it's time to, it's getting time to say goodbye. So next week will be my last show. And I want to use this week and next week the opportunity to reflect on some of the ideas that we've explored over many, many, many years. Some of you, this might be your first time listening to the show. Some of you have been committed listeners for many years. And I want to thank you for lots of the feedback. My favorite feedback is when somebody sees me in a shop and says, I recognize you from your voice. Radio is a very interesting medium where you connect to people, where, I'm sitting in front of a microphone and putting my voice out, but having no idea who we're reaching and what kind of relationship we can build with one another when I have no idea who's listening. But many people walk over to me, say they feel like they know me from all these years listening. It's a fascinating concept where you're known and you actually don't know who the person that knows you is. But we've explored a lot over the years, and I want to wrap up the last this weekend. We'll see about next week as well. On the topic that's probably the most passionate for me, and that is our children. I wrote a article and a few weeks ago, and wrote in a few parts, and received very interesting feedback on it. And I want to share some of the thoughts put together. It was like a three-part series on parenting. And would love your feedback. Feel free to send it to Chai FM or next time you see me at the shops. If you ever want to see modern exhaustion in its purest form, just look around the school park at 3 p.m. You'll find a fleet of parents idling in their cars, one hand on the steering wheel, the other scrolling through messages about who's bringing what to the next class event. There's a yoga mat on the passenger seat, a half-drunk takeaway coffee in the cup holder, and at least one child in the back seat explaining with impressive conviction why everyone else's parents said yes. Nobody appears lazy. Nobody seems calm either. Because we have transformed parenting into a full contact sport with extramurals, playdates, WhatsApp groups, and the endless circulation of permission slips and party invites, the modern parent spends more time in traffic than in conversation. We're all striving to keep up with an invisible standard that keeps shifting. It's not that we don't love our children. It's that we've begun confusing movement with meaning. Parenting has become a competition for many to demonstrate devotion through activity. We're constantly managing, arranging, driving, mediating, texting, and reacting. We attend every event. We oversee everything. We intervene before anyone asks. The exhaustion isn't incidental. It's structural. We've created a system that demands our constant presence just to keep going. Now, I wrote this a few weeks ago. It's interesting. Yesterday, I was watching a TED Talk that came out. I actually recommend you to watch this talk. It's called Why You Should Spend Less Time With Your Kids. I don't fully agree with the title. I do think quantity time is very important, but a lot of the premises that she talks about deeply resonated. This idea that we've overextended ourselves. We think that parenting is controlling our kids, being our children's PA. But here's the uncomfortable truth. Most of us secretly believe that if we stop controlling our kids' lives, something essential will collapse, that our children will fall behind, that we'll be failing them, that love is measured by how exhausted we are at the end of the day. So we keep moving, we keep doing, we keep proving. But somehow beneath all that motion, we've lost sight of what we're truly building. Because what we're doing now is what I'll call active parenting. It's the relentless effort to meet every need, solve every problem, anticipate every crisis. It looks loving because it's loud. It feels responsible because it never stops. But it operates like a salary. You work, you get paid, and then it's gone. It covers the emotional bills of the week, the missing uniform, the forgotten lunch, the late night study panic. But the moment you stop working, the income stops flowing. Active parenting keeps the machinery running. It extinguishes fires, organizes logistics, and manages the immediate. However, it does not create anything that outlasts the effort. When we're absent, the system falters. When we step back, the structure wobbles, because the structure is us. Let's be honest, this isn't sustainable. And more significantly, it's not educational. Children brought up in a household entirely driven by parental effort come to depend on that effort. They don't learn how to cope with the world. Instead, they become accustomed to waiting for someone else to handle it for them. Let's be honest, most of us recognize this. We feel it. We sense that all this busyness isn't creating the depth we hoped for, but we don't know how to pause because stopping seems like abandonment. We've forgotten that there is another way. But for most of human history, parenting wasn't this frenetic or this frantic, not because parents loved their children less, but because the structure of life itself was different. The home wasn't a launching pad for activities. It was the center of gravity, and it was where life happened. Children didn't leave the house at 7 in the morning and return at 6 in the evening. They grew up inside the rhythm of the household. They saw their parents work. They watched their mothers prepare meals, manage the home, care for the sick and their elderly grandparents. They watched their father's labor, solve problems, make decisions under pressure. They absorbed how adults spoke to one another, how they handled disappointment, sometimes better, sometimes worse, how they recovered from failure, how they celebrated small mercies. The home was a workshop of character, not because parents sat down to lecture on virtue. Most times kids were to be seen and not heard, but because virtue was lived out in full view. Children learned patience by watching their mother wait for bread to rise. They learned resilience by watching their father repair what broke. They learned hospitality by watching the door open for strangers. They learned reverence by watching their parents pray. And importantly, children were not the center of the home. They were part of it. They carried real responsibilities, not just token tasks like tidying a toy box. They fetched water, cared for animals, helped with siblings, and supported the family trade. They learned early that the world did not rotate around their comfort, and that competence was gained through effort, failure, and repetition. I'm not going to paint it as an idyllic past. Life was tough. Infant mortality was high. Parents could be harsh and emotionally distant. But within that harshness, there was a clarity about how people became people. You observed life. You observed the adults in your life and you learned how to be one. The transfer of knowledge happened through proximity and participation, not instruction. We were right to move beyond authoritarian coldness, but in our haste to correct those failures, we've overcorrected into something just as problematic. We've made children the center of everything, and in doing so, we've lost the very structure that used to shape them. This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. I'm sharing with you some thoughts on parenting, some thoughts on children. Feel free to agree, disagree. It's always been a conversation. I want to share this song. It's called Don't Leave Me On My Own. It's one of my favorite songs. And it's really talking to God and teaching ourselves and our children to stand on their own two feet while having a relationship with God. When you give your child a relationship with Hashem, they're much more able to be independent and much more able to chart their own course. This is Zusha, Don't Leave Me On Your Own, on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul. Today we're talking about the parenting model we can sustain. In Jewish life, the understanding that children are formed through proximity to lived virtue, not just formal instruction, is deeply intentional. The Talmud lists a father's obligation to his son to teach him Torah, to teach him a trade, to teach him to swim. These weren't subjects on a syllabus. They were woven into daily life. Torah was studied at the table, discussed during walks. As the Shema says, as you're sitting in your seat and as you're walking, and lived through the rhythms of Shabbos, Chagim. A trade was learned by working alongside a parent. Swimming was taught because survival required it. The home was a moral ecosystem with a tone, a texture, and unspoken assumptions about what really mattered. Children didn't have many formal sermons. They felt what the family valued. They knew which behaviors were celebrated and which were quietly corrected. They understood the hierarchy of importance of values, not through lectures, but through observation. When the Shema commands us to teach our children diligently, it doesn't specify classroom hours. Instead, it outlines it this way. When you sit in your house, when you walk on the road, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Teaching occurred in the corners of everyday life. It was atmospheric, relational, and unhurried. We've lost a large part of that atmosphere, not because we stopped caring, but because life became outsourced. Our children no longer see us labor. We outsource education, socialization, even formation. And then we try to compensate by filling the margins with activity. But you can't teach character in the margins. You can't form a soul through scheduling. Formation requires proximity, time, and a stable environment that keeps shaping the child, even when no one is managing the process. Education is very slow, and most of its dividends only manifest long-term. We know how well we've raised a person when we see how their life looks many years later, in middle age and beyond. You raised a human who can manage the stress of midlife and hold onto solid relationships, competency in life and career, be involved in communal activity, be connected to their heritage. Wow, gosh, you've done incredibly well. And that's the shift we need to understand. We moved from homes that form children to homes that serve them. We've replaced the moral ecosystem of the home with a logistics operation, and we're exhausted trying to hold it all together through sheer force of will. I often joke that modern parents seem to have received an 11th commandment from God that was hidden from previous generations. And it reads, "Thou shall worship and respect your kids. Thou art obligated to watch every game they play. Otherwise, thou art neglectful." But there's another way. An older way that still works, a way of building homes that keep forming children, even when we're not actively managing them. A way that creates depth instead of just managing activity. And it's called passive income parenting. And understanding it requires something most parenting advice never addresses, which is the real asset we're building. So what are we building? So I want to use an example. A few weeks ago, someone reached out asking about some educational material I had developed. And they want to know if they could use it in their own teaching, in their own courses. Of course, I said. So they asked how much. I said, it's for free. Use them freely. There was a pause. He says, that's crazy. Why do you not charge? You put real effort into this. And I was quite confused by the question, why should I charge? It felt almost absurd. And then it hit me. See, I grew up watching my father, may he rest in peace, run a publishing house called SIE, Sichas in English. For decades, he published Torah scholarship translations and commentaries, hundreds of books, and every single one was made available online for free. Now, that's marketing, not to build a platform, just because that was what you did with Torah. You shared it. Now, my father never sat with me and explained this philosophy. He never gave a speech about generosity or the Jewish duty to spread knowledge. I just watched it every day. I maybe even resented it. But year after year, book after book, I saw that he made it available for free. And now, nearly 7 years since his passing, when someone asks me why I do not charge for material, the question itself feels strange, not because I'm particularly generous, but because I absorbed a way of being. I grew up in a home where knowledge was not hoarded, it was given. And that is, in my mind, passive income parenting. Not what we preach to our children, but what they inhale from the air around us. The dividends do not show up immediately. They emerge decades later. When you realize you have become something you were never explicitly told to become. Now, passive income does not mean doing nothing. Before income flows, investment happens. You save, you sacrifice, you build assets that quietly compound over time. And parenting works the same way. It's not about doing less passive parenting. It's about investing differently. It means creating a home that keeps producing goodness through values, rhythms, and relationships that do most of the formative work. Many in the older generation understood this instinctively. They did not rely on books and theories. They built homes that functioned, not perfect, but functioned. Homes with rhythm and order, clear boundaries, warm relationships, and lived faith. What made them work was consistency. The home held its shape. That stability became the container in which children could grow safely. So that's the truth. The difficult truth is that the real challenge of parenting is to become the kind of person whose presence shapes a home. Not performing values, but embodying them. Not explaining what we believe, but living it so naturally that belief becomes the very texture of daily life. Children do not learn honesty from speeches about honesty. They learn it from living with someone who tells the truth, even when it costs them, who admits mistakes without fuss, who speaks about others with integrity, whether they are present or not. It is easier to sign up for another activity, our children, to sign them up, than to ask what kind of person we are becoming in our children's presence. It's easier to manage their behavior than to examine our own. Passive income does not happen by accident. We have to build an asset, and in parenting, the asset is us, our character, our integrity, our emotional steadiness, our faith, and our humility. The values we have internalized, the battles we have fought to become more honest, patient, kind, and slow to anger, these create the atmosphere your children breathe. They absorb it silently, and that compounds. Think of it this way. If our children turned out exactly like us, with our temperament, our habits, our tone, our relationship with anger, gratitude, and faith, would we be satisfied? Proximity is powerful, and children absorb far more than we realize. Our behavior is more contagious to our children than the flu. In a passive income home, five quiet elements, I'm sure you could highlight many more, but I'll name five, do most of the formative work. Number one, character. Every home transmits something. The question is whether it is intentional. A child raised in a home with honesty, gratitude, and humility and kindness that's lived, that's very much embodies the home, does not need weekly lectures. They breathe it in. Character is not only what we embody, it's more than that, it's what we celebrate. A good home measures a child not by popularity or marks, but by who they are becoming. It notices effort. It praises integrity. We are not raising CVs. We are raising mention. That's number one. Number two, relationship. Connection is the delivery system for character. Without it, rules sound like noise. Relationship does not mean indulgence. It means reliability. It means being the person they know will still be there when the story gets complicated, when they have failed, when the world feels overwhelming. Us, the parents, will be there. In the past, this came naturally because families lived and worked in proximity. Today, we must be deliberate, protect the time, meals together, unhurried conversation, presence without distraction. Quality time is sometimes overrated. Quantity time is often underrated. We'll talk about that in a moment. Rhythm. A home with rhythm has predictability, and predictability breeds security. Children need to know what comes next, not minute by minute, but in the broader pattern of life. Supper happens at a certain time. Shabbos meal is non-negotiable. Sunday mornings are slow, or maybe not. Or perhaps they're a blur of soccer booths and cereal bowls. Either way, they are consistent. These rhythms form a container in which children can grow. When the world feels uncertain, the rhythm of home becomes an anchor. Number four, boundaries. The word no does not crush a child's spirit. It strengthens it. There is no nutrient like vitamin N. No. It teaches that love and limits can't coexist. I've spoken to many parents, teachers in various schools all over the world. And they tell me that most kids come into school today thinking that the word no is a bad word. The parents teach the child that the word no is not a word of love because therefore the parents can't say it. And then some parents even call the school and tell the school, do not tell my child the word no. They're fragile. Really? In a passive income home, boundaries are part of the grammar of family life. They learn what is expected, what is negotiable, and what is not. Ironically, we think we are being kind by saying yes to everything. But warmth without boundaries breeds anxiety, not security. We all need to hear the word no. That is one reason why there are more negative mitzvot in the Torah 365 than positive 248. No builds more character than yes. And finally, five, reality. A passive income home does not curate adulthood. Children see their parents disagree, apologize, and forgive. They see faith not as a slogan, but a way of moving through the world. And they see it as responsibility. Children are not spectators. They are contributors. They have meaningful work to do, not token chores. They learn early that competence is earned through effort. And that competence leads to confidence. You know, we often talk about self-esteem. If you're doing nothing with your life, it's very hard to have self-esteem. If you have not accomplished anything, if you have no chores and responsibilities, if you've not stretched yourself, you don't have self-esteem. It's hogwash. It's fake. Self-esteem comes from competence. Competence leads to confidence. And that being part of a family means carrying your share. Now, to build this kind of home takes a lot of time. Not quality time, necessarily. Quantity time. Quality time is for uncles and aunties, maybe even grandparents. The luxury of people who can drop in for an hour and make it count. But we are not guests in our children's lives. We are the main cast. You cannot form a soul in two focused hours a week. Children need our living presence. They need to see us when nothing is happening. When they are bored, when we are simply existing in the same space. Formation happens in day-by-day real life. There is no formula, but I believe that every child needs a few waking hours a day with at least one parent, not performing for them, not managing them, just being there. Now, this could come with hard choices. It might mean a smaller house so that one parent can do less work. Declining promotions, saying no to relocations, choosing a slower career path, sacrificing what we thought we wanted to build for what actually matters. Every choice has a cost, and there's no living in rewind. Yeah, it's uncomfortable. It cuts against everything our culture says about success and ambition. But if we are honest, most children today are not struggling because they lack opportunities. I believe they're struggling because they lack parents who are present. We have made parenting so exhausting that we have no energy left for the one thing that actually works: being there, being steady, being real, being consistent. Our parents were not as naive as we assume, and we are not as wise as we imagine. Modernity is a mixed bag of blessings and curses. And I think we would do well to check what we are actually carrying home. Our children will remember very little of what we said or bought for them. They'll remember whether we were there, whether we were calm, whether we were dependable when the world was not. So my question to myself, to you, is what are we willing to give up? Not in theory, but in practice. Because passive income parenting is not built on good intentions. It's built on presence, consistency, and sacrifice. And it is worth the price. Every single rand. This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. And on that theme of being there with our kids, not charting their course, not managing it, but walking along with them, here's a gorgeous song called Holy Song by Israel Portnoy on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson, and we were talking today about when parenting becomes passive income. So I want to wrap up the show, my second to the last show on this platform, on Fabringen. Next week will be my last. It's been a good run for 13 years. So I want to share a famous anecdote about, you know, fall was settling gently over a remote reservation somewhere in the United States when the tribe approached their new chief and asked what kind of winter was coming. Now, he was a modern chief raised without the instincts of his ancestors, and when he looked at the sky, he saw nothing. So he went with caution. He told them that the winter might be cold and that they should begin gathering firewood. A few days passed. Doubt crept in. So he walked to a phone booth and called the National Weather Service. Is the coming winter going to be cold? He asked. It looks like this winter will be quite cold, came the response. Reassured, he returned and urged the tribe to gather more wood. A week later, he called again. Does it still look like it's going to be a very cold winter? Yes, the meteorologist said. Colder than last year. 2 weeks passed. The chief calls once again and says, are you certain? Absolutely. It's shaping up to be the coldest in 5 years. So now he tells his people to collect every scrap of wood they could find. A month later, he makes one final call. Just checking. Are you really sure this winter will be cold? Oh, yes, the weatherman said. At this point, it looks like it will be the coldest in 10 years. Maybe the coldest in a century. And the chief said, how can you be so sure? And the weatherman says, because the Indians are collecting firewood like crazy. I love that story. The story lingers because the pattern is so familiar. Certainty grows louder with every retelling, even though nothing in the sky has actually changed. So the weatherman believes the Indians that they're collecting wood. The Indians are collecting wood because the weatherman says it's cold, and it's an endless circle. One person's fear becomes another person's confidence. And before long, an entire community is preparing for a winter no one has confirmed. A crowd can borrow one another's panic and call it wisdom faster than we'd like to admit. And that's the world we live in. We look around and absorb the mood. We compare calendars, schools, programs, extracurriculars, and we quietly assume that the louder the pace, the safer our children will be. We watch other children, other families, and wonder if we're doing enough. We borrow stress, borrow ambition and urgency, each of us collecting firewood from the same fear of being left behind. But it wears us down slowly, quietly, until we forget we ever had a choice. And it creates a peculiar kind of poverty, even in homes that are full of love. parents who are exhausted but can't stop moving, children who are accomplished but stressed out, calendars that are full but family connections that are thin. We have everything except the thing that actually warms a home, sacred time to simply be together without performing, without producing, without having anything to prove to anyone. But here's the issue. We are terrified of being wrong. What if we slow down and our children fall behind? What if we step back and they don't get into the right school, land the right opportunity, develop the right skills? What if everyone else knows something we don't? So we keep watching, comparing, and moving, because stopping feels like abandonment. Thinking differently feels like arrogance. And the idea of building a home that doesn't match the homes around us, well, that feels almost reckless. But here's the truth. No one actually knows. The parents ahead of us in the car park are just as uncertain. The families we're trying to keep up with are watching us for cues. The schools might be guessing as well. The experts are hedging. We're all collecting firewood based on forecasts that are based on the only fact. And the fact is that we're collecting firewood. That's the fact that we're working with. And somewhere in the noise, we might have stopped asking the important question. What if the thing everyone is doing isn't necessarily working? What if the frantic pace, the outsourced formation, the constant activity, what if it's not producing the depth we hope for? What if we're exhausting ourselves, building something that doesn't last? The courage to think differently doesn't require certainty. It just requires honesty. And if we're honest, most of us know that something is being lost. We feel it. We see it in our children's anxiety, in our exhaustion, in the thinness of our conversations. We know it isn't working. We just don't know if we're allowed to stop. There's a moment near the end of the Torah when Moshe, who had carried his people out of Egypt and through 40 years of wandering, knows he is speaking to them for the last time. This was a generation raised on manna and miracles, and it's about to cross into a land where life will no longer arrive from heaven. They will need to build homes, plant fields, raise children, and shape a society all without him. So he gathers them and says, "Ki ha-mitzvah hazot, this commandment, this way of living, this entire path I set before you, lo niflesi mimcha, it's not hidden from you, it's not far away, it's not in the heavens, it's not across the sea, it's very close to you, in your mouth and in your heart, to do it." Moshe was telling us and reminding us that we can change our lives, that behind all the noise of modern life, we can look sideways and forget that the architecture of our homes and our children is still ours to draw. We assume that change must be collective to be real, that everyone has to do it. Often when I talk in a shir and I say about, you know, some change that maybe we should bring, everyone's like, but how will we change everybody else? We should stop trying to change the world. We wait for the whole community to slow down before we dare to breathe differently. But the truth is, we don't need permission. We don't need everyone to change around us first. We don't need to wait for the school system to shift or the culture to slow down or other parents to stop collecting firewood. If we know what matters, we already carry the wisdom our grandparents carried, the knowledge that homes are built from the inside out, that children are formed through presence and rhythm, that character compounds slowly and quietly through years of steady warmth and guidance. The question isn't whether you have enough. The question is whether you're willing to trust what you already know instead of borrowing certainty from a crowd that's just as lost as you are. This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul. Today we spoke about parenting becoming passive income. It's been an incredible journey. Looking forward to see you next week, to be online, to be able to share. As I mentioned, next week will be the final week of Chai FM for me after quite a journey. I wish you well. I wish you a great day. Signing off, my name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. God bless.